This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. New Zealand cyber attack on financial markets. Are we at risk here? And it's Entrepreneur Friday, a custom clothier getting ready to open in the Gold Coast, even during a pandemic. Right now, American consumers spent more than expected last month. Let's talk about it with Robert Dye, chief economist at Comerica Bank, based in Dallas. Bob, it's good to have you back on the show. Consumer spending up 1.9% in July. What do you make of that?
Well, Cisco, the income and spending numbers have just been absolutely all over the place the last several months with cutbacks in terms of employment. And then we had government support coming in, both in terms of the checks, stimulus checks, and then the enhanced unemployment benefits. And now those have gone away. So you put all that together, and I think we're through this highly volatile period. And I am encouraged that spending did, as you reported, came up in July. Now, because it has come up in the second half of the second quarter and has stayed up going into the third quarter, that tells me the third quarter GDP is set for a nice rebound here after the absolutely catastrophic second quarter.
Now, consumer sentiment, that improved. Okay, we're kind of getting into that as well. Does that play a role in consumer spending if they're feeling better about things? Are people more likely to spend money?
Well, that's a complex situation, and sometimes, usually, yes, it does. But there's an old joke amongst economists: when the going gets tough, the tough go shopping. And sometimes we see a divergence between consumer spending and consumer sentiment. In this case, we see a lot of pent-up demand because of what consumers haven't spent or didn't spend in March and April and May. So there's still a lot of pent-up demand that's going to get spent out, even though consumer sentiment, consumer confidence numbers are in flux right now.
What are maybe one or two takeaways from Jerome Powell's talk at Jackson Hole?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for the average person on the street, not a whole lot, but for those of us who are involved in financial markets, the Fed's going to tolerate a little bit more inflation. They're going to keep interest rates lower for longer, and they're really going to do everything they can to pull the unemployment rate back down as much as possible.
And how important is that to an economic recovery, not just this year, but say in 2021?
Well, the issue is really that the economic recoveries the last several times around have been a little bit anemic at the start. And the Fed is trying to do what it can to lift that as much as possible. And right now, setting expectations that interest rates will remain low and saying they're firmly focused on bringing a high unemployment rate back down. So at least in terms of sentiment and confidence in the Fed, I think these are positive developments.
Thanks for all the insight. That is Robert Dye, chief economist at Comerica Bank. Coming up, could be storage issues with some potential COVID-19 vaccines, which might make it a problem for many people to get it right away. The storage of potential COVID-19 vaccines could prove to be a major challenge once a vaccine is developed. Let's get the latest from Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Michelle, help us understand this.
It is very important for coronavirus vaccines that use this technology called mRNA to keep them at very, very low temperatures. Now, this is important because these are the first two vaccines that we're expected to see. One of them is from Moderna and the other is from Pfizer and BioNTech. And we're talking about very cold, -4 degrees Fahrenheit for Moderna's, and we're talking about -94 degrees Fahrenheit for Pfizer and BioNTech. Now, that's just for the the transportation and the storage of them. You do have a little bit of time when it comes to actually giving the vaccine, because obviously something that's frozen, you can't administer to someone. But the period of time is very short, and that's going to make it tricky.
So what happens if something goes wrong and those temperatures are not met?
Then the vaccines might not be effective, and we will just have to throw them away. And that is a problem, because once we get a vaccine, many, many hundreds of millions of people, perhaps billions, are going to want them. So every dose is going to be critical.
Do those storage terms make it more difficult to get the number of vaccines that we would need out to, whether it's pharmacies, clinics, hospitals? I mean, it seems like you need a lot of specialty chambers to be able to hold this stuff.
You're going to have specialty chambers to hold them. You're going to have specialty ships and trucks and other vehicles in which to transport them. It becomes a very complex logistical process, which, of course, is the problem that we've had all along with this coronavirus, right? Whether it comes to testing or masks or treatments, the manufacture and production and just the creation and getting all of these things where we need them has been one challenge after another. But this one certainly seems to be at a large hurdle.
That's vaccines. Let's talk about testing. The White House says the feds are going to buy 150 million rapid tests, 750 million. That's Abbott's test. You can get results in maybe 15 minutes. Is that a game changer in trying to battle this?
Public health officials really do believe this is a game changer. And let me tell you why. It's because it doesn't require equipment in order to get an answer. So think about it like you think about a pregnancy test. This is a product that can be used almost anywhere. It is about the size of a credit card folded over, and it doesn't use urine. It uses a swab that you have that you put in through both nostrils, and then you just put a couple of drops of this liquid, a buffer that allows the material to flow the way that you would with a pregnancy test. And it can be done anywhere. They can be done simultaneously. So you're not waiting for a machine to finish processing whatever happened ahead of you in order to get the answer. They are going to require that health professionals administer these, but that could be a school nurse. So it is potentially a game changer. There are, of course, many questions, not least of which is the fact that the federal government has said it's buying $150 million, which, by the way, is the total amount that Abbott is expecting to make this year. So who's going to get them? We're not entirely sure, but it is something that for some people it'll be a game changer.
So $5 per test, I mean, that would, I guess, put a school in a situation where maybe once a week they could test a dorm if it's a college situation. But it's not a situation where they're every single day, everyone on campus or everyone in the high school is going to be able to get tested.
Yeah, I can absolutely see the $5 tacked on charge for my airline ticket. And if you're going to a fancy restaurant, perhaps, you know, that you don't want to have to worry about at all, that I can see an additional $5. But when you start talking about these really large numbers of organizations, if you're talking about schools or even, you know, city governments, that type of thing, when you're going to be wanting to test large numbers of people, even many companies, like that's, while $5 on its own seems not that much, right? That's the cost of a Big Mac meal. So you could have a test instead of a Big Mac meal. But if you're doing it for your entire organization that might have 10,000 or 50,000 or 100,000 people, that $5 a pop adds up.
Yeah, that actually brings up a good point here. So from the time that I am exposed or the time that I'm infected, do we know yet how long it takes for me to actually have a positive test? And the reason I ask is because it sounds like a test like this, a 15-minute rapid test, is something, for example, that a cruise line could use to say, hey, all 1,500 of you or 2,000 of you, before you get on the boat, we're testing you with this. And if you're negative, you get on. If you're positive, you don't, so that they can ensure security and safety on that ship. But I mean, is there a chance that you're infected and it just doesn't show up in the test yet?
The tests actually are less sensitive and specific than the current tests that we're using, right, which are the PCR tests that use these huge pieces of equipment, you know, $750,000 pieces of equipment that are in laboratories. Those ones are like 99 to 100% accurate. This one is less accurate. It's 97 to 98.5% accurate. So you do lose a little bit on the margins, but in terms of, you know, paying $5 to get on a cruise ship, it would weed out most of the people. And then perhaps those other folks could get a PCR test to make sure that they have the exact, you know, risk result, that they know whether they're dangerous or not. But it is just a work in progress, Cisco. You are hitting on all the most important things here. And the bottom line is we just still don't have some of the answers.
Thanks for all those details. That is Michelle Cortez, a health reporter at Bloomberg News. Just ahead, a severe cyber attack targets a stock exchange overseas. Could it happen here?
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The government of New Zealand has ordered one of its spy agencies to investigate a cyber attack. It disrupted the country's financial markets for a fourth consecutive day. We're joined by Adam Levin, founder of Cyber Scout, author of the book Swiped. Adam, what do we know? I'm assuming they're not releasing a lot of details. What do we know about what happened in New Zealand?
Well, all we know is that they've been a target of a distributed denial of service attack, and as a result, their systems are being overwhelmed, and they had to shut down their stock exchange. It's just plain and simple. And you have to start with the premise that no system is immune from a distributed denial of service attack. And the big questions facing any system is, what's the intensity of the attack? Were they able to detect it early enough, isolate the IP addresses that the attack is coming from, and block it?
Is this the sort of thing that could happen here to affect our financial markets?
I think it could happen anywhere. I mean, we've seen massive denial of service attacks that have brought down significant parts of the internet. If you remember the Mirai attack a couple of years ago, where a lot of major sites went down. But I think that when you're talking about the New York Stock Exchange, this is something that they've been preparing for a very long time, and even before 9/11. And New York State in particular has extremely stringent laws that are based to some extent on the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation of Europe, the EU, and that, you know, they're trying to be as ready for it as possible. But again, you're not immune from it. And depending upon how intense it is, and, you know, how many different directions it's coming from, like if botnets are used, that's where they string together thousands of Internet of Things devices, or they string together servers. Depending upon the number of devices, the intensity of the attack, it could take some time to sort it out. And even if you know where it's coming from, you don't know all the different places it might be coming from. So you have to kind of go after segment by segment by segment till you block them and shut them down.
Now, when it happens, obviously you're mentioning New Zealand, you got to shut down the market so there's trading that cannot take place. But in any way, does it mess up with trading records or messing with things that have already been done?
Well, again, if there is an attack and the attack is a breach of the data contained in a system, it might also give a hacker access to certain data that they either could manipulate or wipe out. That's possible. But I think that every precaution is being taken, and especially, when you're talking about the New York Department of Financial Services, their regulation is very sweeping, and it's really focused on everything from breach reporting, data retention, and also basic principles of data security, risk assessments, requirement for a chief information security officer. So, I mean, you know, they're doing everything they can. Again, nothing is perfect. Nothing is foolproof. And if you're talking about a state-sponsored hacker, and in this case, you could be talking about somebody who's extremely sophisticated, creative, and persistent, you know, you're up against a serious opponent.
Thanks so much. Adam Levin, founder of Cyber Scout, author of the book Swiped. Still ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, a luxury men's clothing brand makes a move into the Gold Coast.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being with us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Chicago police say they are ready for whatever this weekend brings. A judge in North Suburban Lake County grants a delay in the extradition hearing for a teenager accused of killing two people at a protest in Kenosha. The COVID-caused decline in travel puts the owner of a downtown Chicago hotel in a difficult spot, owing more on the property than it's worth. Entrepreneur Friday, we meet the founder and CEO of a clothing store chain that's bringing personal attention to the shopping experience in Chicago. WBBM Business, the Dow up 69, the NASDAQ is up 13, and the S&P is up 5 points. Oil is flat today. We have sunshine in Chicagoland, lots of humidity as we head to a high of 93 degrees. Right now, 89 at O'Hara and Midway, 87 degrees downtown. The Chicago Police Department has made plans for the weekend with an eye toward preventing violence and looting. WBBM's Mike Krauser reports.
Police Superintendent David Brown says the nature of police work these days is hope for the best and prepare for the worst. Protests, nothing new, have become a regular occurrence, but there's a feeling by some involved that looting and violence and property destruction are legitimate forms of protest. Brown says police are not putting up with mob rule.
So the critical incident response team, about 200 officers dedicated to downtown. So the community safety team, along with Summer Mobile, is 500 officers dedicated to the neighborhoods.
Some downtown residents are for the first time leery of being out at night. Business owners have had it and some will never return. Police, some outfitted for combat, are working 12-hour shifts through the weekend. Mike Krauser, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
A judge in Lake County has delayed the extradition hearing for Kyle Rittenhouse. He's the Antioch teenager accused of shooting and killing two people and wounding a third during a protest in Kenosha this week. Lee Phyllis, communications manager for the Lake County State's Attorney's Office, shares what happened in the courtroom.
Public defender requested a 30-day continuance of the case for Kyle Rittenhouse. It was granted. The next hearing is September 25th. He also said that he plans to hire a private attorney.
Rittenhouse faces five felony charges, including first-degree intentional homicide and first-degree reckless homicide. If you're working remotely or anytime you're at home, if you have a smart speaker, Alexa, or Google Home, all you have to do is tell it to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are a little higher today. The Dow up 81, NASDAQ up 16, and the S&P is up 6. Let's see what's going on. Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management, based in Greenwich, Connecticut. Vahan, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, you know, not much happening today. My bigger concern is that the rally seems to be overextended. You know, I think that there's a good chance that we will see a bit of a sell-off, especially in the technology area. We've gone through a long period of time where these large cap, primarily tech stocks, have been driving the indexes higher because of the way the indexes are created, being market cap weighted rather than equally weighted. So I think that we could see these indexes come down. I think some of these tech stocks have run up way too high. One, which is not even in the S&P 500, has become completely irrational, in my opinion, and that's Tesla. That stock seems to go up every day, even though it is slightly down right now.
And isn't that crazy? I mean, we've been talking with analysts for a long time about Tesla stock, and they all, just like you say, it just doesn't make any sense. And yet, if you had invested in it, you'd be doing pretty well.
Yeah, you know, it's a great example of, I guess, what you would call investor sentiment, or perhaps in this case, mob rule. I mean, everybody is piling into that stock, causing it to rise higher and higher. But the valuation makes absolutely no sense at all.
As far as tech stocks go, are you seeing a bubble there, or are you seeing that you know, they're actually worth it? I'm thinking the stat that my producer and I were talking about today, tech stocks now worth more than the entire European stock market. Is that warranted?
Yeah, I saw that stat. You know, I think in some cases it is warranted. You know, investors like to pay for growth. And they like stocks that are growing. They like companies that are growing. Apple Computer is a great example of a company that's posting growth, and they like to pile into things like that. But the question is, you know, how much do you pay for growth? And I think we've kind of got a little bit too far. Now, I'm not saying that all tech stocks are overvalued or should be avoided. I mean, I have been buying some lately, but I've been buying the ones that are, you know, really out of favor. I mean, I'm looking at stocks like Intel and Cisco that, you know, sold off quite a bit after their earnings announcements. Yet over the long run, I think these are stocks that, you know, make good sense on a valuation basis. And if you buy them now, you'll probably do well and get a very nice dividend as well.
Does that just reinforce, we talk about it a lot on the show, but it probably bears repeating, just reinforce the fact that you need to look at the numbers, you need to look at the fundamentals. So much trading is just that, trading and not really investing. It's very emotional.
That's right. Well, there are basically two ways to invest. One is to use fundamental analysis, investing for the long run, where you pay a lot of attention to the valuations, and you want to make sure that you don't overpay for stocks, and you want to buy them when they're really cheap. But another way to invest that is also effective is momentum investing. And right now, momentum has taken over. The problem with momentum investing is that it tends to be shorter term in nature rather than long term buy and hold value investing. So momentum can last for quite a while. I mean, sometimes it can last for 6 months to a year. But you do need to be careful because sometimes the momentum will change very rapidly, and it's sometimes difficult to get out when you want to.
Thanks so much, Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management. Just ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, personalizing the clothes shopping experience for men.
In with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. Upscale menswear brands Q Clothier and Rye 51 coming to Chicago's Gold Coast. Let's learn more. Raja Ratan is here, founder and CEO of Q Clothier. It's good to have you on the show. So I guess give us a thumbnail sketch of your business here.
Yeah, thanks for having us today. We are a dual brand menswear concept that has retail stores and professional clothiers. So our service offering is the key to our full offering. We have well-appointed retail stores. We offer the ability for our clothiers to come to customers' homes and offices. And we also have a digital platform so people can have contactless shopping, but that's still supported by a clothier. So it's a full omni-channel product for premium menswear.
So how key is the custom experience to your business? I mean, lots of places where guys can go buy clothes.
Yeah, that's where we started, custom, and that's the bread and butter of what we do. The custom side is the majority of our business. We also have a great casual side in the Rye 51 offering, but guys like that, the customers that we serve love the customization and the unique experience to be able to craft their own garments from scratch.
So what is it about the customization as you talk to your customers? What is it that they love? I mean, what really hooks them on that?
Well, one is the biggest thing is the fit. A custom-made garment fits a guy's body perfectly because we take 25 different measurements off his body and create that garment from scratch. And then subsequent to the first garment they have, we have their measurements and preferences on file. Guys typically don't love to shop, so it makes it really easy when you know it's going to fit every time because we've got your profile down and you just have to pick fabrics with your clothier on subsequent visits.
So we always ask entrepreneurs, the hole in the market. I mean, what is it that made you say, hey, we're moving into Chicago, we're moving into the Gold Coast, we think this can work here?
Yeah, so we were in expansion mode anyway. And a key impetus to us coming to Chicago was a key hire. Trunk Club, which is based in Chicago, was starting to wind down their operations. And we were able to recruit Emily Reuter, who is a senior director there. And so she was the spearhead of the Chicago location, and we have several planned beyond that.
So when it comes to a pandemic, I mean, you still feeling confident about marching forward right now?
You know, it's kind of a crazy thing to be expanding, but we're definitely confident in our business model, and we have always been a profitable company, so we're excited to move forward. And, you know, you do so with caution and, you know, and it's a little bit scary, but, you know, we're excited.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting really to see how it goes. It sounds like the concept is one that is needed, which is always what we're looking for on Entrepreneur Friday. Thanks so much for being with us. That is Raja Ratan, founder and CEO of Q Clothier, joining with Rye 51. They're coming to the Gold Coast. The address will be 48 East Oak Street. They're opening in mid-September. Still to come, a Chicago hotel whose owner owes more than the property is worth.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The owner of the Palmer House Hilton is dealing with a huge burden brought on by the drop of travel in the pandemic. Let's learn more from Danny Ecker, reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Danny, help us understand what's going on here.
Well, this is the unfortunate, harsh reality for hotel owners, really. And the Palmer House is just a really high-profile example. The owner of the Palmer House, Thor Equities, is a New York-based real estate investor. They stopped making mortgage payments about 4 or 5 months ago. And now that their loan is now in the hands of special servicers, it's been flagged for potential default, which basically means that they're in danger of losing the hotel. And recently they had the hotel appraised for a new value. And boy, it's got to be really tough to appraise a hotel now, given that it's hard to figure out what their revenue is. But the appraisal came out this week and showed that the value of the hotel, at least in the eyes of an appraiser, was 45% lower than it was 2 years ago. So it just shows you kind of the stark drop-off in property values we've seen, especially in the hotel sector.
And that's probably, and we're talking about the Palmer House, but they're certainly not alone, as other hotels have dealt with the same thing.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, the Palmer House and larger hotels like it, I mean, this is the second largest hotel we have by room number in the city. You know, larger hotels probably have it a little bit worse right now because they're more reliant on group gatherings, food and beverage revenue, conventions and trade shows at McCormick Place, which obviously has been dark for a while now. But yeah, the JW Marriott was also in the loop, was also flagged for potential default. It is it's not underwater, according to its recent appraisal, but it did have its value dropped in terms of its appraised value from $370 million 3 years ago to $210 million. And there's a bunch of others that have downtown that have been facing tough issues and flagged for potential default on their loans. The Hotel Felix, Hilton Suites, Chicago Mac Mile, and the Whitehall Hotel are a few of them. And there may be a lot more coming. I mean, that's really what's so sad right now about these hotels is that we have far more hotel rooms downtown than there is demand for now and maybe will be for several months more.
I have to wait and see, but it seems like with so many hotels struggling, these mortgage holders, it just makes sense for them to try to work with it and just hold on and see if next year's any better.
Yeah, in some cases, yes. Some of these have what are called CMBS loans. It's basically, loans that were packaged with other loans and sold off to bondholders. It's really tough when they're in a pool of bonds to kind of find a way to work out a deal with a lender. You're not dealing with one property and one lender. But, the other thing about it, too, is that a lot of these hotel owners are looking at this saying, well, we've lost so much money here. How long is it going to take us based on the simple carrying costs of owning a hotel to make back the ground? Is it going to be worth it based on their investment strategy? So there's some owners that have closed their hotels or suspended operations that are seriously considering maybe not reopening at all and just saying, well, we're done and wait till a bank takes it over.
Just amazing. Thank you so much, Danny Ecker. Danny's a reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function. It works online and with the radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.